You are listening to the Punk News Podcast number 211 with two Adams and one John coming at you live on Monday night. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We've got a jam-packed episode today. You know we're going to be talking about it. Everybody's talking about it on the internet. They're talking about it at Rolling Stone. They're talking about it at Spin. They're talking about it at your little cousin's blog. Henry Rollins and his comments on suicide. We're going to be talking about it in depth, in detail, with exquisite, precise contemplation. That's right, people. We're going to be talking about this all angles. It's not as simple as he's right, she's right. Or is it as simple as he's right, she's right, you're wrong, this guy's wrong? We'll find out. But we'll also be talking about the Bruce Lee Band, which does not have Bruce Lee in it because he's been dead for like 30 years. It does have Mike Park in it and Jeff Rosenstock and Mike Huguenot and Dan P of the Bricks and a whole lot of other musicians. We're going to be talking about Bruce Lee Band's upcoming album. We're going to be talking about Death From Above, 1979. People are still excited for this band to come back, even though to me they don't even seem to be that old of a band. We're going to be talking about Drive Like Jehu coming back. Or if you want to pronounce it in Hebrew or in Aramaic, Drive Like Ehu. We're going to be talking about SoundCloud. They're making money finally and they're trying to sell out. Is selling out punk rock? We'll be talking about it. We're going to be talking about Kicker, the most punk rock of all bands in my esteemed opinion. And I just said my own opinion is esteemed. How do you like that? And we're going to be talking about Effed Up, The Dirty Nil, and all of Adam White's very favorite bands playing a fest. And with me here tonight, I got two clones. The question is, do I have two clones, do I have an original and one clone, or do I have a good Adam and a bad Adam? Let's find out. With me here tonight is news copywriter, news editor, basically the guy that makes sure that all my horrible typos are corrected. We've got Adam Eisenberg. Adam Eisenberg, are you a clone? Are you original? Are you a good Adam or a bad Adam?
I think I'm one of those clones that thinks he's the original, and then when I find out I'm a clone, it's going to lead to some sort of tragic consequences.
Now tell me, Adam, would you say I remember when Spider-Man had a clone and the clone realized he was the clone, he's like, well, I'm just going to live my own life and leave Spider-Man to have his life. Adam, will you go off into the woods and leave your own life? Will you try to replace the other Adam, or will you have as David Johansen famously said in 1971, a personality crisis?
I think my first option would be trying to take out the original and replace him, you know, with nobody knowing any better.
And I believe you or your original is married, correct?
Yes.
Now, could you replace your original without the original's wife catching on, do you think?
I guess that's what we'll wait to see.
I think we just made ourselves $1 million. Let's pitch this to Warner Brothers right away. And also with us here is the other Adam, Adam White, managing editor. Adam White, are you a good Adam? Are you a bad Adam? Are you a clone or are you an original?
This is just like the last season of Archer. Kind of.
I love clones, man. I love the concept of clones.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm in a good mood. I'm excited to talk about today's thing. I guess the first part of our podcast won't be super whimsical, but I think it'll be an enlightening discussion.
Cool. I'm looking forward to this. I'm really tired.
Oh, really?
I am tired, but I am tired because of rock and roll, and that's a good thing.
That's right. Adam White, you just drove, or no, took the train to see some bands. Tell us about these bands that you saw.
So, I went to the Arboretum Festival in Ottawa, which is what someone, Mark from Ottawa, who wrote into the show, who's apparently like the person I talk about on this show now all the time, he wrote in. He said to go to that, and it's something that I went to. Bunch of reasons. The primary one, me being entirely predictable, was it was one of the Constantine's reunion shows, so they closed out the night, and that was pretty cool. And then there were a bunch of other bands that were playing it that that were really fun to watch, some new bands I had never seen, some really big names in Canadian indie rock that I had never had a chance to see live before it played, you know, on the kind of punk side of things. The Steve Ademic band played it, which was great. We've played them on the show tonight. I think I'm going to play a song of theirs later, so I'll talk a little bit more about them. Really cool kind of art pop band out of Toronto called Weaves that played earlier in the day that was really cool to watch. The big thing during the show, I think for a lot of people, aside from the Cons reunion, was Chad Van Galen played. Chad's a singer-songwriter guy out of Calgary, Alberta, and he's super weird and super quirky, and I think like he's one of those weird Canadian acts that I don't think really has a ton of play outside of Canada and outside of even certain circles in Canada, but people who, you know, love Chad. And I'm watching Chad Van Galen and this guy walks by me and I'm like, who the hell is that? It really looks familiar. And it took me a few seconds and I'm pretty sure it was Michael McDonald, who was one of the kids in the hall. Kevin McDonald. Oh,
I thought you meant Michael McDonald of
Chicago.
Yeah, no, Knights in White Satin.
No. Kevin McDonald, the curly haired guy from Kids in the Hall. He was there watching Chad Van Galen play, which was weird because all of a sudden I'm like, oh, hey, where's one of the kids in the hall? This is super Canadian. So they played and then booted across town to this after party show that was in a recording studio, and they had like really severe kind of capacity issues because it was like all the Ottawa punks were trying to get into this thing. I had to wait in line for a while to get into it. So, like, as I was kind of cabbing around town to get there, the Dirty Nil played it, and this was the end of their tour with Grays, and then Grays played it, and I got in during the last couple songs of them. Then this band from up that area called Witches, with no vowels, I guess, when you spell it, that was this kind of really mean drone noise rock band. And then the band that we played on this podcast last week, which is New Swears, which is a kind of like a Black Lipsy sort of party punk band that was like, it was out of Ottawa. So they were in their home territory. And that was completely bananas because we're all packed in this little room that is not, it's not a venue. It's basically like a room in a warehouse. And this band gets on stage and they start playing and it is just wall to wall to wall mosh. Like there's no one in that room that was not moving. And I think like the few of us that were not from Ottawa that were in the room kind of got mushed back against where the sound guy had his stuff set up. And we're all just like aghast at the insanity that is happening. And the crowd just went completely shit bonkers for like an hour. As this was, well, it wasn't even an hour long set, but they went completely crazy for the whole set. It ends with the band basically crowd surfing around as they're playing their instruments until the chords get pulled out of them. There's shit flying around the whole time. And then the band leaves. The crowd just starts chanting the last line of the last song that they played, which is a song called No Fun. That's off the full length that they had that came called Junk Food Forever, Bedtime Whenever. That was the full length that they were doing the show for. The last line in that song is them chanting, I'd rather be fucked than be myself. And the whole crowd of these, like, mostly at this point, shirtless Ottawa punk dudes just kind of like lock arms and start chanting, I'd rather be fucked than be myself for like 6-7 minutes after the band has basically left. And they just keep going and keep chanting. And we're like, those of us, again, that are not Ottawa people that were like there witnessing this, we're just kind of like standing there looking at each other like, holy hell, this is like Ottawa, good for you. This was complete craziness to a degree that I haven't seen at a show in a long, long time. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a good trip. It was tiring. I got like trained in and trained out. And, you know, I'm old now, so staying up until like, you know, two to go see bands all over a city and then doing a bunch of walking and stuff like that makes my ancient bones very tired. But super fun, very good time. Ottawa did a good job there.
Well, Adam, I'm glad you had a good time. And actually, Mark did send us a brief email. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But he said, I went to see the Dirty Nil on Adam White's recommendation off the podcast. I liked them and would buy their new 7-inch. They didn't have any merch. I would definitely go see them again. So there you go, Adam White, making people fans of the Dirty Nil. Let's play a tune. Adam White, do you have a tune to play on the Punk News podcast?
Okay, yeah, we're going to play something from that show. So I'm going to play a song from the Steve Adamic Band. I think I played them on the show before. I don't really care. So this song is called Waiting for the Top. It is 2 minutes and 8 seconds long. It's off the LP that they had that just came out on Dirt Nap Records. It's their fourth, which is called Dial Tone. And yeah, so they're a three-piece kind of power trio that are really a lot of fun. And you know what? Today is Steve Adamic's birthday that we're recording this. So there you go. Happy birthday, Steve. This is Waiting for the Top.
We are back, and let me tell you, that was a rocking tune. Steve Adamic Band, I'm becoming a fan. Listen, people, Adam White has got good taste. Let me tell you, people, Adam White said to me, he said, John, listen to the Spits. I got into the Spits. Spits are one of my favorite newer punk rock bands, even though they're not that new. Spits rule. Adam White says, John, he says, go see Titus Andronicus. I went and saw Titus Andronicus. Great live show. So anything Adam White says, check out, I definitely check out. But let's talk about contemporary events, things that are happening. Basically, this past week, Henry Rollins made a lot of people pretty mad. I guess it was on Friday or maybe a little bit before then, Henry Rollins posted an essay that responded to Robin Williams' suicide. The gist of his post in the LA Weekly was basically that he didn't understand why Robin Williams, somebody with kids, would commit suicide. I'm going to bring just a clip of his essay. You can find the whole thing at Punk News. Henry Rollins, this is just a quote from the whole thing, he says, "But I simply cannot understand how any parent could kill themselves. How in the hell could you possibly do that to your children? I don't care how well-adjusted your kid might be, choosing to kill yourself rather than to be there for your child is every shade of awful, traumatic, and confusing. I think as soon as you have children, you waive the right to take your own life. No matter what mistakes you make in life, it should be your utmost goal not to traumatize your kids. So, don't kill yourself." Henry, you got a lot of hate from that. People sent him email, people posted on Facebook, people posted on Twitter. They said, "I hate you, Henry." Henry didn't know what he's talking about. So, either the next day or the day after, he posted a brief apology on his own personal website where essentially he just said, "I'm sorry that I wrote that," essentially. He further detailed his apology on the LA Weekly on Monday, which is today, and it looks like I can't pull it up right now. Oh, yes, I can. Here we go. So Henry further detailed his apology, and he said he basically has a lot to learn. Here's just a brief quote of Henry Rollins' apology from today's LA Week. Ah, nah, how you like that? Anyway, so let me pull up real quick, Dan, while I vamp, because I pulled up the wrong thing. So in Henry Rollins' apology, basically, he more or less recounted his statements, and he said that he has a lot to learn. He said that he's sorry, and if you want to tell him you hate him or whatever, he says he thinks he deserves being told that people hate him and stuff. And so I'm just going to read a brief quote from his article. Here's a brief quote from Henry Rollins' article. Henry Rollins in the LA Times said, after reading carefully and responding as best I could, it was obvious that I had some work to do in order to educate myself further on this very complex and painful issue. I'm thick-headed, but not so much that things don't occasionally permeate. And then later on, he said, basically he said, one of the only things that gives me a breather is music. I medicate with it. He talked about how he suffers from depression, but not deep depression. So he might not be that well informed about deep impression. He closed out his article by saying, I got several letters thanking me for what I said. However, it was the ones that took me to task that made me think the most. To those I offended, I believe you and I apologize. If what I wrote causes you to toss me out of your boat, it is to my great regret, but I understand and thank you for your thoughts. Now, I've got a lot of opinions on this, but I'll let you guys kick it off and then we can come back around to me.
Well, I mean, what I would say about it, and I think he kind of acknowledges this in his apology, is his suggestion that it's a selfish act does kind of indicate a lack of understanding of what real depression is like. You know, when it has a hold of you, that conscious thought of, am I being selfish, doesn't necessarily register because it's a disease.
That's I think that's a big point of where Rollins' misunderstanding of this or misread of this comes in, is he's not approaching it as something that's debilitating, something that's has, you know, that may have, say, like a chemical effect in the brain or anything like that. He's looking at it, I think, quite a bit through his personal hardships that he's had in his life, and saying that, like, you know what, if I could, you know, pull myself up by my bootstraps and like fight through the shit, why can't everyone? And that's not the issue, right? That's not the problem. Isn't that, like, people aren't strong enough? The problem is that people have an actual medical problem.
Yeah, I mean, his, you know, when you look at it that way, his interpretation of it is not that different than what we see from a lot of people, at least in American media. Whenever, you know, something like this happens, the reaction from a big portion of the crowd is, you know, why couldn't they just suck it up? It seems like, you know, with mental illness in this country, at least, you know, suck it up is the answer from a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think part of the issue too, and I think this is maybe why Rollins got so much shit about it, is that while I think that people could buy him expressing a misinformed opinion about a lot of things, but those that are sort of on the inside of the mental health issue know that the big task right now is fighting stigma, because the wrong opinions, the wrong understanding of so much of this, depression and other mental health issues included, prevents people from seeking treatment, prevents people from, you know, getting on top of things when you know their medical intervention can make a difference. It prevents funding from getting in to actually help combat this stuff. There's all kinds of problems that come from the stigma that's associated with it. And if, you know, Rollins may not have meant to step out and to increase that stigma, but the kind of the doubt that he casts with his platform has the effect of doing that, has the effect of, you know, clouding the issue. And that's taking away from a lot of the work that people had actually been trying to do to fight that stigma. So that's, I think that a lot of people were outraged because they're looking at this and saying, like, you know, Rollins, you could be wrong about this, but you, the fact that you had to soapbox your wrongness about it is not helping anyone in this case. And I think there's a lot of frustration that was being expressed from that perspective. Now, that said, I've got an opinion about this whole thing. And John, I don't know if this is going to tread on what you're doing. I think you got an explosive amount of stuff that you're going to unleash here.
Well, I do have a large volume of stuff, but I feel it's very measured.
Okay, so I'm going to express this, and if I'm at all treading on what you're going to do, just tell me to shut up because I want to hear you do it. The problem I have with this whole thing, it's not even so much a Rollins problem. It's a, we take these punk celebrities, these old guys that were there at the start, and we start trying to build them up into moral authorities. And then we look to them and the things that they say as if there should be some wisdom inherent in there. And I think that that's a fundamental flaw in the way that we interact with these old guys anyways.
Adam, you and I have the exact same mental process. We could be twins.
All right. Are you telling me to shut up?
No, but I want to hear your opinion because my angle comes at a slightly different angle than yours, but our fundamental precept is the same. So by all means, continue.
All right.
Did you like my use of the word precept?
I did. You're a lawyer. So what I'm going to do is, so back up from this issue in general, from the mental health thing, from Rollins in particular, and you look at any of these old punk guys that gets into hot water when they go and they say something stupid. The fact that they go and they say something stupid shouldn't really be that much of a shock because they're people and people say and do stupid things all the time. And we all express that, you know what, we really like punk rock because we like the DIY aspect of it. We like the fact that the bands are made up of real people and that the potential is there that if, you know, if Adam and John and me wanted to go start a band, we could go grab some instruments and not know how to play them, but just through like, sure, you know, fuck you attitude, we could figure it out and have a crappy little band. And we all like that idea about punk rock, and we like that approach to it. And that's how a lot of this stuff got together and a lot of this stuff formed. At the same time, a lot of these people that were in these early punk bands that we really like and that we really hold up for having those ideals, they were all like 20, maybe, when they were writing half the stuff that they wrote. Like, at the time that they got famous, these guys were super young. And then, you know, they got famous, punk blew up in the mainstream, you know, their lives moved on, music moved on from where they were. And somehow by virtue of them being old now, we're going and we're saying that you know what, we want to take you, you know, Ian MacKay, we want to take you, you know, HR from Bad Brains, we want to take you, you know, Rollins or whoever. And we want to hold these guys up as being saints, as being like moral authorities, and where the things that they say should be wise and should be right and should be guiding a generation and stuff like this. But to beatify them like that completely dehumanizes them to me. It takes away that whole anyone can do this sort of spirit of the thing, and it sort of says, no, these special people with special opinions are the people that are actually making this music. It's not just anyone. And if you're going to approach it like that, then yeah, it's really super shocking when they get on the horn and they say something completely dumb. But I don't like to think of them that way. Like, I don't know, like, I don't think you can know a lot about Rollins and assume that he's like a completely level-headed philosopher or anything like that. Like, Rollins has a lot of fun things to say and he's a good speaker, but the dude is fucked up. He's had lots of problems. He's had lots of opinions that have been stupid over the years. He's done a lot of things that have been not so good and a lot of things that have been awesome. And that's great. That's kind of what makes him Rollins. But to go and to look at him and to say, you know, Rollins, this major event has happened. Can you give wisdom on it? I think is the wrong thing to do. Now, you can go and you can blame LA Weekly here for going and saying, hey, we need to have a Henry Rollins column where he can express his crazy opinions and we can get clicks.
They got a lot of clicks,
right? So, hey, from their perspective, that's great. But I don't like the idea that we have to hold these guys up like that. Because for everyone that's a saint that you have, to me, fucks it up for everyone else. So you've got your who are you? You're completely, you know, unflappable guys that are there. I think you have one, maybe. Like, you have Ian MacKay as being your, you know, your one true moral authority in punk. And then who else? You can't, you know, the Ramones are all fucked up their whole lives. You know, as great as they were, you know, they were either complete drug addicts or conservatives or anything else like that. You can't look at Joe Strummer, you know, and we can't keep building him up to be this saint. Now, I love Joe Strummer. He was one of my favorite musicians. I love a lot of the things Joe Strummer did, but the dude could be a total prick sometimes, just like anyone could.
He liked to chase the skirts, that's for sure.
And for us to go and to imagine that they couldn't or to like gloss over those things, I think takes away from them as people. So for us to go and to like take any of these old punk guys, I guess this is where I keep beating around to, and try to make them these big moral philosophers is a complete dumb thing for to do. So while I'm not absolving Rollins of having a stupid opinion and then having the stupid judgment of expressing his stupid opinion in public, I mean, that's on him. I got to say that us collectively as a culture really got to get off this, like, what does the old punk guy think about, you know, complex issues that they're not at all necessarily qualified to have a really informed opinion on? I think that's dumb. You know, other genres of music can do that fine. I mean, you know, if one day we're going to have, you know, Paul McCartney sit there with his big smiling grin and, you know, give wisdom down onto the world, that's cool, rest of the rock universe. You can do that. But I'm not cool with doing that with my old punk guys. I'd rather think of them as old bastards than old philosophers, because I think that's closer to the truth.
Adam, I actually agree almost basically entirely with that. I do agree entirely with that statement. I come at it from a slightly different angle. What people forget about Henry Rollins is, Henry Rollins didn't used to be, and I don't think he still is necessarily supposed to be considered this wise sage. I mean, in Black Flag and his early spoken word stuff, he was the guy that said shocking things. If you remember, like, he used to talk about how he thought Charles Manson was awesome in his Black Flag era spoken word stuff. He produced one of Charles Manson's albums. He used to portray the bad guy. People forget about that. I mean, all the way up and through, like, his second or third solo album, he portrayed himself as kind of this monster, this berserk, crazy guy that you didn't want to mess with. So people forget that, and now that they're saying, oh, Henry Rollins, he always knows what you're supposed to do or say. And in a way, he's put that upon himself, because in his spoken word programs, he does do a lot of philosophizing and saying, here's what I think is right, here's what I think we should do, here's what I think is the right course of action. By the virtue of him saying that so confidently, people have started to believe him, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's right. But more to the point, and Adam sort of addressed this, is I would say in the past 10 to 15 years, we've started to demand that our artists espouse a moral issue. We've started to demand that our artists act as moral people. I say it's completely unfair to demand that an artist has to teach moral lessons. That is not an artist's job. And in fact, chaining an artist to that requirement really destroys art. If you ask me, it's a parent's, teacher's, relative's, peer group's job to teach morality, not an artist. I mean, if you look at it this way, what if we made Darby Crash expose moral ideals instead of being Darby Crash? You lose all that wild, dangerous art. Look, what if we said Black Randy, you can't sing about how awesome it is to steal from people and do drugs. You have to say, what's the right thing to do? Well, then you lose Black Randy. What about Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols? A lot of the Sex Pistols' messages are complex issues that can't be broken down into what is the right thing to do. It's more of an investigation of an occurrence, of a concept, rather than this is the right thing to espouse, you know? And so I think for some reason, and I blame Ian MacKaye and Penny Rimbaud, although I certainly don't think they meant to do this, because Ian MacKaye and Penny Rimbaud often say, here is the right thing to do, people have started to demand that all artists espouse a moral ideal or a moral message, when really it is not fair to the artist to demand that they espouse a moral ideal. And really, artists are more interesting when an artist isn't concerned with espousing a moral ideal, but rather investigating a topic. I mean, if you look at Godfather or Taxi Driver, those aren't movies espousing a moral ideal. Those are movies exploring a concept. And if, I mean, in Taxi Driver, would it be better if they had, you know, not Fredo, Corleone. What's Al Pacino's character in Godfather?
Michael?
Michael Corleone. The general idea of Godfather is he sacrificed a lot and has changed a central person. Was it worth it to him? What if who did that? The wine guy, Coppola. That's Godfather, right?
Yeah.
What if under the modern rule that we apply to punk rock stars, Coppola had to say it was bad for Michael Corleone to make that decision? The whole movie just becomes stupid. So to demand that our artists make moral points is foolish. And I don't think we should demand Henry of that, especially when Henry used to be kind of a villain, you know, if not a villain, a interesting, complex guy. And I find myself in a weird position defending Henry, because I admire Henry greatly as an artist, but I disagree with a lot of what he says.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to write us letters here and be like, you know, like, how are you guys possibly, like, defending Henry Rollins, potentially destructive views on suicide? I think we're not. I think we're, like, just trying to say that we shouldn't be holding these people, Henry Rollins as a great example of one of them, up as people that should be making these grand pronouncements in a way that affects, you know, that has such voice. Like, that's not their role. That's not what we should be using them
exactly.
for. That's what we should expect of them.
I actually do defend his right to make that point, and that goes to my third point. But let me make my second point next. My second point is Henry Rollins, if that was his view or is his view, that he thinks it's stupid to commit suicide, he picked a poor time to make that point. That's like, I'm anti-drugs myself, but when an artist or whatever, if they kill themselves with, like, drugs or whatever, I'm not going to say the next day, oh, that's why you shouldn't do drugs. You know, it's just, even if you're right, good taste dictates that you shouldn't make that point then, you know? And so even if Henry is right about his point or believes in his point, right after the Robin Williams suicide is not a good time to make that point. Though I can understand why he would do it right then. The reason he might do it right then is sometimes when something happens and everybody seems to be making a point that you disagree with, you feel as though you have to make your point right then to battle back against what you feel is the wrong pervasive philosophy. And so I think that's what he did here. Bad time to make it, but I can understand how he got excited and made the point right then, even when it was not the best time in good taste to make that point. My third point is this is what I find most distressing, is Henry Rollins made his point, you know, and a bunch of people said, Henry, you're an idiot, we hate you. And some people even said that, Henry, I'll never listen to you again, which I think is a ridiculous statement. Adam, actually, both Adams, I would consider us good friends, correct?
Yeah,
sure.
Do I agree with you two on 100% of things all the time?
Oh, God, your musical opinions are completely shit bonkers sometimes, let me tell you.
Right. So that's my point is, if you disagree with Henry Rollins on this one point, for you to write him off completely as an artist is a foolish move. Because if you write an artist off on a just because you disagree with them on one thing, you'll find eventually that there's not a single artist that you agree with, except for artists that make no central point whatsoever, which is kind of why I think Beyonce is so popular. But we can talk about that later.
Well, I think that kind of goes back to this whole idea of making these people into these heroic figures. I mean, we judge them on a really small sliver of their personality, the music they make or the art they create. And then we kind of extrapolate from there and make assumptions about them based on what we want them to be. And so, you know, when you find out they're not, you set yourself up for this terrible disappointment. And that goes for punk or for anything. I mean, you know, people look at their favorite I think of Charles Barkley when he used to do those commercials where he said, I'm not a role model. You know, people look at their favorite athlete and they think, well, you know, he hits a lot of home runs or, you know, scores a lot of points, so he's the greatest guy around. And then, you know, he's busted for beating up his wife and people run
Charles
to his
Charles Barkley
defense.
Beat up his wife?
No, I'm not Charles Barkley, but, you know, any number of athletes. And, you know, then a lot of people, they're so desperate to kind of preserve this image that this person's a hero that they rush to their defense, you know, in spite of overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And I think when you turn people into heroes without knowing much about them, you set yourself up for disappointment down the line.
I agree, and that actually goes to my very last – well, the last part of my last point is I see this more and more in punk rock, and maybe this was always there. Actually, not just punk rock and media. It seems to me that everyone has to kowtow to the opinion of the majority. If someone has an opinion different than the majority, they get bullied into, quote, apologizing or saying what they said was wrong. And this distresses me to quite a great deal because tyranny of thought is basically one of the most dangerous things there is if you ask me. So Henry Rollins had a different opinion that it seemed as what the majority had. So he gets bullied and said, the majority thing, you have to agree with us. I don't know why everyone wants their artists to agree with them. I take for my artists new and interesting ideas. I might not agree with them, but I find the concepts interesting. I think that when we as a society make everyone agree with everything, we basically become a society dangerous to basically destroying ourselves from within, destroying critical thinking, destroying innovation, destroying art. And so I think it's very dangerous when we require everyone to agree on everything about everything. And I think that's a society where we're going. Am I overreacting? Maybe. But I'm scared with regards to how people treat those who think differently than they do, particularly when the fundamental idea of punk rock was it's a different way of thinking. If you go to those early punk rock shows, you have people saying wildly different things, bizarre, crazy, weird stuff, and they weren't bullied into agreeing with the majority. People were like, wow, that guy's crazy or interesting. I mean, think of all the wild stuff Jello Biafra said in the late 70s. What if he was bullied into what the majority says now? Jello Biafra is a national treasure, and that he thinks differently, and so his ideas should be preserved, even if we disagree with him, because it's always important to maintain checks on balances in what you believe. And I think right now, instead of maintaining checks and balances in what we believe, we're saying everyone has to agree with the majority, or we castigate you.
Well, we kind of live in this culture of apology where somebody expresses an unpopular opinion, you know, everybody lashes out on social media or whatever, and then that person apologizes. And odds are the person apologizing, their opinion probably hasn't changed. They're essentially apologizing for having a different opinion than you. And you know, I, in a lot of those cases, I disagree highly with their opinion, but they have every right to have it and certainly shouldn't be apologizing for having a different opinion.
I agree 100%, and I think just because somebody's offended by something doesn't mean you should apologize. I mean, it used to be in punk rock. I hate to say it used to be in punk rock, but the point of punk rock was to offend, you know, if only to express new ideas and see if there's something there in causing offense. Now, if someone just says they're offended, even if what you're saying isn't inherently offensive, you have to apologize, which I think is ridiculous. But what can I say? That was a heavy discussion. Do you guys have anything else to add to that discussion?
No, I don't think so. I still feel that I feel like this need to keep like disclaimering this discussion so that we don't end up on the shit end of everyone. But so I don't know. I just want to keep clarifying this, that like what Henry said was not the does not fall into the generally accepted understanding, at least amongst professionals and people that have to deal with this stuff, of how depression and suicide works. And I don't think we're defending his opinion.
I'm defending his right to say it.
Yeah, we're defending his right to say it. We're concerned with the way in which the backlash of this thing has materialized. I mean, the nicest thing that I saw in Henry's apology was that he admitted, you know, I got a lot to learn about this. And I'm like, all right, that's a good way to approach it then. It's like, don't make it a, you know, the thing that I said I'm gonna be held to forever, and I have therefore burned all these bridges, you know, admit, okay, I gotta learn about this. And that's maybe the right way to think about it. But yeah, like, we're totally defending his right to say what he wants, have the opinion of what he wants. But then I guess what we're also saying is that we probably shouldn't hinge too much on the opinion of Henry Rollins anyways.
I agree. Let's wrap up this conversation. I'm going to play a tune, and we'll come back, and we'll blast through some fun and wacky articles. How about that?
We need wacky, John.
We got a lot of fun and wacky articles. So let's play a tune. Actually, this song is kind of heavy, too. People might know Chuck D. He's the lead guy of Public Enemy. Public Enemy's been around for 30 years now. Almost 30 years, 28 years. And they're a very political hip-hop group. They've been associated with punk rock and heavy metal since the inception, thanks to Rick Rubin and thanks to the punk rockers just like in Public Enemy. He just put out a brand new live album. It's called The Black in Man, as opposed to The Man in Black. It's The Black in Man. It's a solo album. It's available online digitally. And he said we could play this single. This is the first single off the album. It's called Give We the Pride. And interestingly, it's got Mavis Staples singing the hook. Mavis Staples, of course, was one of the very famous members of the Staples Singers. Staples Singers have a lot of famous songs, but including I'll Take You There, which is a very, very famous song. So this is Chuck D of Public Enemy from his brand new solo album, The Black in Man, and Mavis Staples doing Give We the Pride.
Divided Souls.
Give me
to survive, no. To survive, yeah. To survive, yeah.
Gotcha. Say it loud when I see wrong. Somebody's keeping songs from being strong. Music abuse when the sick gets used. Now look at all these young people confused, Lord. I've even seen old folks applaud nonsense that we cannot afford. Flashback, now ruining some box with sex and teen pop equals hip-hop stop. Our young world stars don't know who they are. Slapping rap down from high art, here's a start. Y'all know better than that. You know why? Cause y'all better than that. Give them hope, give them love, get them pride instead of turning raps into little old traps. Not some character, know what I mean? Get some character, human beings.
Give me some pride, Lord. Make me feel proud of myself. Let me walk with my head up high. Let me know that I'm fly. Instead of worrying about the gold and the jewelry that don't do nothing for me. Cause I got the best, most beautiful brown or chocolate, cocoa butter skin in the world. Give me some pride, Lord. Give me some pride, Lord. I need a little pride, yeah. I want to walk tall. To survive, no, to survive, yeah, to survive, yeah.
Is it me? Grown folks acting like kids on TV, following, trying to be what they see, sitting around sipping BE, no different than MT, reality trying to murder me, oh say I think they still cannot see. Tired of social media asking me, Chuck D, what you think about this policy? Wanna do something for the people, make us equal instead of being creatures with human features. You fail to plan, you plan to fail. 2014, 3 million folks in jail. 11-year-olds can't relate to champagne. Silent N-words in marketing campaigns. Believe in anything celebrities saying. Now 40-year-olds be blinded by the fame.
Sisters, shake what your mama gave you. Ain't no sense in you taking that thing or doing them things till you know what you're doing. Baby, I'm with you. Girl, you know we love you. We think the world of you. You're our queen. You know what I mean? We gotta love ourselves more, y'all.
And we are back. Are you guys ready to get wild, wacky? Are you guys talking about fun, wet, loose, wild tunes?
I want to talk about philosophies and outrage. Okay, let's talk about stuff. So the Bruce Lee Band has announced they posted a new single that you can check out, and they've announced a new LP. So the new song is called Generations. It features Jesse Michaels, of course, of Operation Ivy and Classics of Love and
Kamen Rider.
Kamen Rider. I always forget about Kamen Rider. Anyways, so they've also announced a new LP called Everything Will Be All Right, My Friend, which will be due out in September. You can find a pre-order link on Punk News. It follows up the EP community support group that they had come out earlier this year. Now, as John said in the intro, the modern incarnation of the Bruce Lee Band features Mike Park on vocals, as well as collaborations from Jeff Rosenstock and a bunch of other musicians. So this song is up. You can check it out. John, you love these guys.
Actually, I don't love these guys, but I might love these guys in the future.
You love these players.
I do love these players. In the band is Mike Park, who I think is a very good musician. Jesse Michaels, I'm a huge Jesse Michaels fan, but also Jeff Rosenstock, I'm a big Jeff Rosenstock fan. Mike Quiganor of Classics of Love and Hard Girls is in this band. So is Kevin Higuchi of the Chinkies. So is Dan P of Dan P and the Bricks. So basically, Mike Park is doing the David Bowie or the Madonna, where you get all the musicians de jure that are very talented and you use them as your backing band, and it works very well. I'm actually not a huge fan of the Bruce Lee Band, but I might become a huge fan of the Bruce Lee Band. I've heard their older albums. The older albums are good, but they don't seem to have the drive or the whip that I like in this kind of music. The EP Community Support Group, check it out. I really, really, really like this track. It's punk rock, but it's ska with a punk nastier edge. So I really, really enjoyed it. And this track, man, with Jesse Michaels called Generations, this track is great. I mean, it's essentially, it's almost a Classics of Love track, really. It's Mike Park and Jesse Michaels doing a super quick, super energetic, hard-driving ska song. I think it's great. I think this album's going to be great. But in a way, I get depressed because I loved Classics of Love, especially the self-title. I loved Classics of Love. I think essentially Classics of Love are broken up. I wouldn't expect a record anytime soon, if ever. And the reason, I don't know the reason, but I would guess the reason is the following. That record did well, but I mean, it did okay punk rock-wise. How many copies did they sell? I don't know, 5,000 maybe? So that's not a whole lot of money to go around. If this was pre-illegal downloading, they would have sold 50,000 copies, you know? Jesse Michaels would have been able to support himself off Classics of Love and keep making Classics of Love albums. But because people want to download stuff in the modern music scene, you just can't afford to keep doing it, or it's too exhausting to do it because it costs you money. And so I will never forgive downloading culture for basically robbing me of a second and third Classics of Love album, because Classics of Love is so great, and everything Jesse Michaels does is just magically wonderful. So I'm almost depressed by this track because it is so good, but Jesse Michaels just isn't reaping the financial reward that he should for being so great. But this, I'm excited for this record.
Yeah, I like the song. I like the band. I mean, this is the kind of ska I can get behind. No funny hats, no skanking. I can support
that.
There
might be skanking. You don't know.
There might be. That's possible.
I'm sort of shocked how, I don't want to say mature because I think it connotes the wrong thing, but let's go with mature. This band sounds. You hear a lot of ska bands, even ska bands that have been around for long enough that they don't need to sound like a bunch of children, and they still sound like a bunch of children to me. But these guys, everything they do sounds kind of classy, and not classy in the sense that it's like classic, like not like it doesn't sound like second wave kind of two-tone ska or anything like that. It just sounds like it sounds good. Like you could listen to it and not have to make excuses about listening to like Real Big Fish.
Yeah, there's more of a maybe a little bit more complexity and thoughtfulness to it than your average ska punk band.
You know, here's my guess why. Three reasons. First, the songs fundamentally are very well-written songs. Second, the players are very good players. Even though ska might be simpler music, the actual players are very good musicians. Third, these guys are not young guys, but they understand, you know, especially Mike Park, the original driving power of hardcore, nastier punk rock. So they bring the driving, the energetic, the more dangerous side and combine it with good playing, and that's why this is so good.
Yeah, so this is really cool. John, bring in our next one here.
All right, so Death From Above 1979 have released a new song. It's called Government Trash. Death From Above just recently reunited after about 10 years or so of inactivity. They've got a new album coming out. The album's called The Physical World. It's out September 9th, so right about when you hear this podcast, maybe a little bit afterwards. And they're also going on tour. Did you guys dig this track? I knew the first track, somebody said it sounds like it was this is for the earlier track they released. They said it sounded like it was music written for a cell phone commercial. I agree with that. I thought this track was a little better.
A little, but man, am I not feeling any of this stuff this band's done since they got back together.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
But there was something that was like really legitimately kind of cool and dangerous about the DFA stuff that they did back when they were around. And I don't know if it's just that, you know, maybe the cell phone commercial comment is a good one, I think. Like maybe it just like since that time, we've had like enough maybe commercial appropriation of like the super fuzzed out stomp and bass thing. I don't know. But oh, it's just like, I'm listening to this and I'm like, it's got a cool like punk rock little cover for it. It's called Government Trash. It should be a little thrashy, I guess. Like, you know, I guess I was expecting more and it sounded really safe. And that's weird because this isn't a band that I consider safe per se, at least not in what they were. So I don't know if the band is different or if just like I've moved on or anything like that, but I'm disappointed.
Is this reunion for the cash?
What cash though?
Is there cash available?
I mean, there's,
are they playing festivals? I mean, festival cash is pretty sweet.
I guess festival cash, but I mean, even when they were at their height, like this is Death from Above 1979. This is not the most, I don't know, like this isn't the Pixies or anything. Like, I don't see how they're going to get back together and rake in all that much festival cash.
Fair enough.
I mean, like, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they got back together because they wanted to get back together or they wanted to make more records with the sound. And that's cool. I'm just, where's the fire, you know?
Well, Adam, speaking of reunions, keep us rolling with this band.
Oh, who are we talking about here? I'm not at all looking at our notes.
Driving Jesus in a Car.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I'll read it and you guys can react.
All right.
Drive Like Ehu, or Drive Like Jehu, or Drive Like Weehu. I guess it would actually be like, I mean, I know people say Jehu.
Like Yehu.
Well, yeah, but you see, it's in Aramaic, it's an I, you know? So it would be like Yahoo. It'd be like that. Anyway, Drive Like Jehu. They're back together while we're speaking about Aramaic on the Punk News podcast.
We all know that because we all watched Last Crusade.
Yeah, that's right out of Last Crusade.
What's Last Crusade? Oh, Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. Anyways, Drive Like Jesus are getting back. Drive Like Jesus are getting back together. They've announced a tour August 31st at San Diego's Rocky Balboa Park, and they're going to be accompanied by organist Carol Williams. But other than that, not a whole lot of people going to know what's exactly going to happen at the reunion show. The band was active from 1990 through 1995. They put out an LP in 1991 and another album called Yank Crime in 1994. After the band broke up, they actually went on to a whole bunch of bands that a lot of people like. Rocket from the Crypt, Hot Snakes, Night Marchers, and Obits. Oh, go ahead, Adam.
You said tour. It's not a tour. It's a show.
Oh, it's a show.
So there's been a little bit of clarity on this since we posted this article that I guess we should bring in here. So the one is that for now it's just a show, and that's all that John Rice has kind of said that it's going to be. And specifically, it's a show because they had the opportunity to do this organ thing. So what I think that like people should look up to kind of get a feeling for what this is. And this was in an interview that he did with Pitchfork, where they asked him about it. And what he said was John Rice knew someone that was on the, I don't know, the commission or whatever that runs this Balboa Park in San Diego. In this park, there's this giant outdoor pipe organ. And as soon as he knew that he had someone who had an in on the giant outdoor pipe organ, he was like, we got to play a show with the giant outdoor pipe organ. And that's what this materialized out of. So, you know, he called up the other Drive Like Jehu guys and was like, hey, you want to get back together and play a show with this giant outdoor pipe organ? And they're all like, cool. So that's the genesis of this. So I think it'll be super interesting if they do get back together. And apparently they're not even going to really rehearse. Get back together and play a show with a giant outdoor pipe organ, and that's it. It doesn't become like a Drive Like Jehu headlines Coachella thing or anything like that. That would be fun. I would respect that.
Yeah, I mean, if that's all it is, then at least you can say they're getting back because they want to and not because of the allure of, you know, festival cash.
Yeah, it's a free show, too.
Adam, so, do you know how much money big outdoor pipe organ concerts bring in the tens of dollars?
Tens?
Tens.
You could sell ice cream from one of those little bicycles that has like an ice cream cart attached to it.
Although, actually, I gotta say, man, pipe organs are really cool. Up in Palo Alto, they've got a movie theater. It's called the Stanford Theater, and it still has the original pipe organ in there. And they like play it before they play like old movies. It's cool, man. Pipe organs are cool.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to see what this looks like, go look up Balboa Park pipe organ on YouTube. And the pipe organ is like the pipes and everything part of it. It's like the size of the bandstand. So it's a big, big instrument. I don't exactly know where you're going to fit all this pipe organ into Drive Like Jehu songs, but hey, why not?
When there's a will, there's a way.
So that's fun. I like that. That's a fun idea for a thing. I'm sort of surprised that not as many people seem to comment on it, at least on Punk News, as I thought. Like, I kind of got the impression over the past 10 years that, like, this was a big, revered band. But I don't know. If it was, like, Lifetime announces show with pipe organ, everyone would be going crazy. But I guess I was wrong. John Rice does not get enough play amongst our people.
Might just be reunion fatigue.
I guess.
People do have reunion fatigue by now.
I just took a drink of my wine, and that was the big dramatic pause there. So anyways, we're going to move on from Drive Like Jehu here. Let's talk about industry stuff a little bit later. John, we're going to talk about Kicker.
Kicker! I love Kicker!
So, the band featuring, clearly you wrote this, punk rock champion Pete the Roadie, along with Toby of Filth, Moz of Dystopia, and Dave Ed of Neurosis, has announced a fall tour. It starts in September, and it'll be accompanied by a split single with the band Submachine out on...
Inimical
Records. That's a word. There you go. On the single, Kicker debuts a new song called Shit at Kicker, as well as a cover of The Partisans' 17 Years of Hell. You can find pre-order links and stuff like that on Punk News. A few of the dates on this tour are with Hard Skin, and Hard Skin are amazing. So, John, explain Kicker to the world.
Listen, kid, let me explain Kicker via this way. I saw Jello Biafra in Philadelphia about 3 weeks ago. No, actually more like 6 weeks ago. Pete the Roadie was roading for Jello Biafra. After the concert was over, there was a line of kids lining up to meet Pete the Roadie. They don't even know who he is. He is the world's greatest roadie. He's like 60. He roadied for, actually more like 55. He roadied for Amoebix. He roadied for Subhumans. He roadied for Fugazi. He roadied for Neurosis for like 4 years. He roadies for Jello. He's this English guy. He's like 55. He's been in punk rock since 1977. He's the most enthusiastic, non-jaded punk rocker you will ever meet. When you meet this guy, the world just lights up because he's been doing punk rock now for 40 years. He's still into it as much as a 15-year-old kid is when the first time he hears The Clash or what have you. Plus, so a little while ago, he formed a band called Kicker with actually some pretty heavyweight Oakland guys. You know, I mean, people know who Neurosis is. That's a heavyweight band. In Oakland, Filth and Dystopia are both pretty heavyweight bands. What they do is they play kind of like UK 82, kind of UK sub-smashing punk rock. But it's kind of funny, too, because Pete the Roadie is funny. If you get a chance to see this band, it is one of the funniest, most fun shows you'll ever see. But it's really, really, like, the riffs, like, because the band is really good, the actual music is phenomenal. I'm going to Philadelphia. I can't wait to see them with Hard Skin. I highly recommend this band. I highly recommend this single. I recommend everything about this band. One of the most fun, rockingest punk rock bands there is today. I love this band.
Yeah, I'm a fan too. I think.
Oh, you know him?
Yeah, and I think.
Adamy? Yes.
And I think they, you know, they're similar to Hardskin in that they're playing that similar kind of style, but you know, like Hardskin, they're not taking themselves too seriously, which really comes through. But it's nice when bands play, you know, that throwback style and do it with some authenticity. You know, what it's not about, you know, trying to look like you're a guy, you know, transported from 1982. It's like you just, you know, it just comes across as authentic.
Well, because Pete is a guy from 1982.
Exactly.
All right, so what do we got next here?
You guys want to do SoundCloud or not?
We can do SoundCloud. Yeah, let's do SoundCloud. All right, it's so boring, John.
All right, we'll just do this one. We'll just do this one quickly. It's something boring. Basically, SoundCloud is an online streaming service where bands can post their music. They're going to soon put ads before and after the songs are streamed. Hypothetically, artists will get a royalty rate of sort of similar to YouTube's monetization feature, where you can get money for the number of plays that you have on SoundCloud. Eventually, SoundCloud is going to be adding a paid feature where you can pay not to hear ads. People say the reason they're doing this is because they're trying to get acquired by larger companies. They had an earlier attempt at acquisition foiled because they really don't make that much money, so now they're trying to make money. There's not a whole lot to say. Is I can't blame a company for trying to make money. Right now they're doing it for free, more or less. What I would say is that's one thing. Remember, kids, when you rely on these online services, They can change the terms of service anytime, so don't rely too much on a third-party online service. Because like I always say, you know, if you're not paying to get in, you are not a consumer, you're the product.
I want to get away from this idea that some of these internet startups are like altruistic punk rocky things that we should be holding to, I guess, that sort of standard. I mean, there's someone that was commenting on this about, oh, look, company's trying to make money now. And it's like, well, like look at what SoundCloud is. So it's a company that has a whole bunch of venture capital invested into it. I'm looking it up on Crunchbase. It has $123 million has gone into SoundCloud.
DIY, from, baby. DIY.
Yeah, from five rounds of investments, $3.3 million in 2009, $10 million in 2011, $50 million in 2012, $60 million in 2014. So all sorts of venture capital and all this stuff, people that I would assume that like the punk rock guys of the world would fucking hate. Like these are the kind of people that I imagine that like Leftover Crack sings about, right? Like, so all this venture money is invested into this company. So yeah, they've been giving this product for free, and yes, it's been beneficial for music and musicians and all of that stuff. And yeah, it's probably a good product, but don't get the illusion in your head that SoundCloud is out there to kind of like to uphold some sort of DIY music ideal and something like that. If they were, they would have open sourced their software and just given it out to the world to use with. They wouldn't be trying to raise money. So yeah, I mean, does this, so that's, I guess that's beside the point. Is this going to suck now that SoundCloud is going to have advertising in it? Maybe. We'll have to see how obtrusive it is. But should we all be shocked that, you know, that a company that's taken $123 million worth of venture capital money is trying to monetize to, you know, pay back those people that have invested $123 million into it? No. So that's where I'm leaving that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the shock arises from, like a lot of these startups, they do give the product away for free at first because they have a cool idea, they develop it, and then they figure out how to monetize it. So when you're used to getting something for free and suddenly, you know, you have to listen to an ad or you have to pay for it, you know, that's shocking to people, but it really shouldn't be.
Tell my meth dealer that, I'll tell you. The first one's always free, Adam.
Mm. We're going to get in trouble with the meth people now.
Don't talk bad about meth.
All right,
let's wrap this up, Adam. Take it away, baby.
All right, I'll do this one. So, okay, there is a guy who I've befriended on the internet here, who is out of Burlington, Ontario. The guy's name is Ben Rispin. Ben organizes an event called Burley Calling. Ben used to be one of the vocalists in a punk band out of Burlington, Ontario called Saint Alvia or the Saint Alvia Cartel. And anyways, that's when I guess people would know Ben as being a musician primarily. But anyways, Ben does all sorts of show organizing and all kinds of crazy scene organizing stuff up in Burlington, which is on the highway midway between where I am in Niagara Falls and Toronto. So if you're in Toronto, it's probably like a 40-50 minute drive out of town. So anyways, Ben's put together this festival. He's been doing it for years. It's getting into its eighth year now. This thing is called Burley Calling, Burley for Burlington, of course. The event's going to feature Fucked Up as the headliner, along with Teenage Head, who was a 77 era punks out of Hamilton, Ontario, really classic Canadian punk band. And the Dirty Nil playing it, who are also like hometown people out of Hamilton. And there's going to be a whole bunch of other bands of various local stripes that I don't know, we're going to have varying degree of name recognition to most of our audience that are playing. You got Dead Tired there, which is the singer from Alexis on Fire's new band out of Hamilton there. You've got the Penske File, who I think we've played in the show before, that are really super fun. Just a ton of other local bands that are on the list right now, and they're going to be adding more. So Burley Calling is happening. It happens in December at a bunch of venues across town. It's one of those sorts of events, December 4th to the 8th, and we're going to see sponsoring it now, which I don't really know what that means. I just keep talking us into doing stuff like that when I talk to these people. So the partly sponsored by Punk News, Burly Calling is happening. So we're going to talk about that a lot more in the coming weeks, because we're going to be involved. I just don't know what that means yet.
Adam E., what bands would you go see on this tour?
I mean, I always love to see Fucked Up again. I saw them once. They don't tend to make their way down often. Teenage Head would be awesome. Those are the big ones for me. I mean, they're the headliners, but those would be the big ones for me.
Yeah, Effed Up is awesome live. I've seen them. They're real cool live. Dirty Nil is cool live. So a lot of cool bands. What else can we say? I guess, should we wrap it up, fellas? Should we wrap it down?
We can. Are you playing another song, or are we wrapping this?
We can play another song if we want, or do you want to wrap it up?
I don't know. We've probably been going for a while. People have songs and play the other places they can listen to.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. But meanwhile, listen next week, kids, because we're going to be playing everyone's favorite game show, Punk's Points. Until then, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.